The names of certain magazines are supposed to cheer a person up. Glamour, Lucky, Gourmet, Allure. Life, these titles suggest, is full of possibilities. Then there's a magazine I read. This magazine has the most downbeat name of any magazine since Downbeat. It is called Living Without. Living Without bills itself as a lifestyle guide for people with allergies and food sensitivities, which sounds straightforward enough, but the name Living Without is so depressing, so forlorn, such a belligerent refusal to accentuate the positive, that I don't know why its publishers don't just come clean and call it Loser. I read Living Without because I actually do live without. I'm allergic to wheat. On the one hand, this is a fairly serious problem. I'm always one bagel away from this panicky feeling of drowning. My throat closes up and I'm hit with nausea that seems to affect every part of me as if my fingers and ears want to throw up. On the other hand, nobody wants to hear about a disease whose treatment consists of scrutinizing food labels and never leaving the house without a fruit snack. Living Without is a magazine that revels in the mundane details of my condition. My favorite regular feature in Living Without is the column Perils in the Pantry, which reads like a particularly over-the-top episode of The Munsters. Just as in The Munsters' upside-down world, in which the pretty blonde cousin is pitied for her ugliness, in Perils in the Pantry, supposedly cheerful events like parties and picnics are treated like the death traps they are. Beware of summertime salads, the column warns, lurking under seemingly innocent lettuce, deadly croutons. Perils at the Party tells the horror story of one German-themed dinner party in which the entire meal consisted of wiener schnitzel, caraway noodles, and bread. Or, as the wheat-sensitive might look upon the table, meat dusted with wheat, rectangular glops of wheat, and baked wheat. The author's advice? Before going out to a dinner party, eat first. Living Without featured one article about a family who had switched religions in search of a house of worship that provided a gluten-free communion wafer. And the greatest election story in recent times? Not the Florida recount in Living Without. In Living Without, the juiciest event in recent electoral politics was the 1998 race for Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts, in which both the Republican and the Democratic candidates were allergic to wheat. Living Without makes me feel less alone, less of an oddball. I don't have any wheat-free friends, and since I hope to hang on to the friends I do have, I try and spare them the nitty-gritty details. Not to mention that most of them have an underwhelming grasp of the pros and cons of various brands of soy flour. My friend Nick was perplexed when the last time we had breakfast together, I asked the waitress if I could have a banana instead of toast. When I asked Nick about it later, he said, "A banana instead of toast? Why not ask for anything then? Anything of a similar monetary value to toast, like a cassette tape." At least I didn't find out I was sensitive to wheat gluten until I was over 30. The real heartbreakers in Living Without involve allergic kids and the terrified parents who love them. Mostly, it's one sob story after another. The boy who accidentally bit into a peanut butter cookie and died. The family of a first grader who spent part of their summer vacation at diabetes camp. Mothers who write sentences such as, "My heart sank," or, "I was standing right next to him when he ate that cookie and I couldn't save him." Still, one of my favorite things I've read in Living Without was written by the mother of a gluten-allergic son. Once a week, family night in their household was called pizza night, and they would all go out for pizza until young Alec was diagnosed. They thought pizza night was history until the mother finally figured out that she could just bring gluten-free dough to the pizzeria. All happy endings in Living Without are like this. Even the triumphs involve minor indignities like schlepping your own crust in tinfoil when going out for dinner. The earnestness of this story, of everything in Living Without, is the main reason I find it so reassuring. There are headlines that would seem ridiculous in any other magazine. An article on gluten-free weddings called Have Your Cake. A guide to international cuisine called The World Is Your Rice Noodle. That concludes with the thought, bye-bye American pie, hello pad thai. It's corny, but that's kind of what I like about it. If the information in Living Without were conveyed more clinically in the dignified style of, say, the New York Times, the information would feel less welcoming, and it would also feel less true. There's nothing dignified about being allergic to wheat. It's the kind of annoying, specific, picky food nuisance you can only really talk about with the one person on Earth who truly gives a hoot what kind of cracker you'd prefer, your mom. The corniness of Living Without is so comforting because it feels so maternal, as if it's written by a gaggle of friendly Midwestern mothers whose warm, cheerful kitchens smell like fresh baked bread. Fresh baked bread made out of rice flour and potato starch.
Sarah Val is the author of a number of books, most recently The Partly Cloudy Patriot. Her story is part of the project at hearingvoices.com, which gets funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I can't live, I'm living is my